My guest on today's show is Jerry Smith. Jerry Smith is a real inspiration to all of us. He was diagnosed in 2004 with the incurable disease of pulmonary fibrosis. But guess what? Jerry is still with us today. All the doctors and the medical men said, "You've got 6 months to live. Go home, get your affairs in order." But Jerry said no. He said, "I'm not going to die. I'm going to survive. I'm going to overcome this." And he truly did. And as a consequence, he wrote the book, "Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear?" The book is an inspiration to all of us, those of us who are fortunate enough not to suffer this terrible degenerative disease, and for those who are going through a similar fate that Jerry went through. This book will inspire you, encourage you, and show you the way forward. Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? Takes readers through disappointments and failures as Jerry does his best to battle overwhelming odds with a deck seemingly stacked against him. Jerry shares with readers his struggles, stories and wisdom. In these recollections, he reveals hope, a light for the darkest days, years and even decades.
You're listening to the future.
So Jerry, welcome, and before we talk about your recovery from pulmonary fibrosis, your life itself has been quite traumatic from your earliest years. And if it's not too painful for you, I wonder if you could just share with us some of those experiences, as it will give us some insight into your strength that you've developed in order to fight these battles that you were going to experience in your life.
Great, thank you, and I'd be happy to do that. My mother, she was born a deaf mute. Her mother died in childbirth. My mother was abandoned because she was handicapped. So when she came home again at 18 years of age, her family would not take her in, so she was put out to work as a live-in housekeeper. The homeowner raped her. She became pregnant with me, and then nobody would take her or me, and so she finally just disappeared and abandoned me where I was born. Then during that year, she met and married a man. They were living in California. She came and got me in Louisiana. It took me out there. Less than 6 months later, he had forced her to get rid of me by filing for divorce. Wow. So she takes me to Texas to a good friend of hers that is married but can't get pregnant. There's a six-month waiting period for adoption to become final. So the woman started the adoption, and before the six-month period was up to make it final, she got pregnant, so she canceled the adoption. Wow. So my mother came from California again and took me to Louisiana. A brother of hers agreed to take me in. So less than 6 months later, he died of a massive heart attack at age 35. So she came back from California again, and this time she had a friend call the Louisiana Welfare Office for them to take me, and they said they couldn't unless she would sign a release so that could be paid for adoption. For some reason, she refused to do that, so she had a friend drive us to the welfare office the next morning. She pinned a note on my shirt with my name on it, and told me when we got there to go up and knock on the door. And so when I did and turned around, the car was driving off. I was about 4 years old, and I didn't see her again until I was 25. So the state took me. I grew up in foster care. I graduated. I worked my way through college, got married my senior year. A few years later, my wife was murdered by a drug addict. And during this time, I'm just full of hate, anger, depression, and I was so until I was about 50. But in the course of the next few years, I met and married my current wife. We've been married 37 years.
Wow.
And God bless her for putting up with another 20 years of my misery to her before I turned things around. And then my grandson turned 15 and got his driver's permit, got a car on his birthday, went out there and got on the freeway interstate, and was killed the first day when the 18-wheeler ran over him. So I attempted suicide with the ongoing problems from everywhere, plus the fact that I was still being rejected most of my life. In fact, my first in-laws, they had me investigated and found out that I was an orphan. Therefore, they would tell their dog, "You can't marry him because he's trash. He doesn't know who his parents are." So they didn't even come to our wedding. So that was the kind of rejection I just kept getting at all ages. And then when I met and married my second wife, her mother couldn't stand me for 10 or 12 years because I was no good, I guess. So anyway, during that time, I was constantly just fighting depression and changing jobs a lot, but I became a pretty much successful businessman in that I got my CPA, Certified Public Accounting, so then I ended up going into real estate and opening 6 real estate offices of my own, so I was fairly successful, but I couldn't be happy with anything, no matter what kind of success I had. So at the age of 50, I then attempted suicide, was in a coma for about 5 days,
right.
And then when I came to, the doctor and friends, a lot of people came to me, and they really started trying to do something to help me, and so finally, over a period of a few weeks, I started going to churches. It was one of those things where you just go to church and then you go home and you don't do anything until you go back the next week. So this time we started going to churches, and I found one I just loved. I connected, and I began to really, you know, think about God and experience God. And so the very first, I guess, sermon was talking about how to get rid of hate and anger and depression, that you have to forgive everybody that has harmed you. And so I started trying that. And of course, people would say, well, make a list of people and of names and then forgive them and then you'll be happy. No. It took about 3 years of fighting that battle to overcome my resistance to forgive. So anyway, 3 years later, I'm about 52 years of age. I start finding that happiness and it becomes fantastic. The happiness
wonderful.
Is the greatest thing I've ever experienced, and I guess the thing is that I didn't really have anything to compare it to, so I didn't know how happy that was or what that meant, because I hadn't experienced it, but it was wonderful for 12 years. I mean, everything. Now, let me say how funny that sounds in the sense that during that 12 years of so much happiness, we still had major problems, my wife and I, but you know what? They came across different. I handled them different.
Absolutely,
they didn't affect me the same, because I was happy.
A lot of people, for example, claim forgiveness until it happens the next time, and they remember all the wrong deeds.
That's what I thought for 3 years. You hit it right on the head there. That's what I did. I'd make progress. I'd take 2 steps forward and then one back. Well, that one back was where we were slipping and sliding. But the thing is, and after 12 years, I'm now 64 years old.
Right.
I've had 12 years of just wonderful happiness. And then I'd go in for a physical, which to me is just an aggravating thing that you have to go through.
Sure.
Just, it was nothing, I didn't know anything, so I went, they found spots on my lungs, and said, uh-oh, you better go to a pulmonary specialist. So I did that, and then they started doing one test after another, and I'm really getting concerned. So if you want to know that, when we really was able, my wife and I, to sit down with our doctor with the results of all these tests, the doctor actually looks at me and says, Mr. Smith, I guess the only thing I could do is give you the worst diagnosis I could give any patient. And then he shut up again. And so I'm a very impatient person. I'm always trying to move forward. So
sure.
I said, okay, well, tell me. He said, well, you have pulmonary fibrosis. It is an untreatable, incurable lung disease. Anywhere in the world, it is incurable. And so I said, okay, what do I do? He said, well, there's nothing we can do. He said, there's no medicine, no treatment or anything. So, and I kept pushing him for some kind of answer. So I think he got irritated, maybe, and he just finally said, look, you have a death sentence and there is no hope.
And
finally I said, what do I do now? He said, well, come back in 6 months for another breathing test, and we will do this every 6 months as long as you live. I said, well, wait a minute, how much time are we talking about? He said, well, based on my experience, I would estimate that you have 6 months to 2 years to live. And then I get this. He said, and if I was a betting man, I would bet it would be closer to 6 months.
Wow.
And then he said, and I said, well, why would we do this breathing test every 6 months? Are they going to help me? No. Then why? And he said, so that I can better estimate how much time you have to live at that point.
One of the things that is so frustrating that I find with medical science is that, for example, they say there's no cure, yet people like yourself, presumably you don't have any medical training, find a way. You don't lie down and do what the doctor says, get your house in order, it's something you've got to do, prepare for your family. You actually say, well, I'm sorry, doc, but I'm not dying today. and tomorrow doesn't look good either. I'm going to carry on living. How do doctors react when you say that to them?
Okay, number one, in this country, and I don't know about any other country, in this country, they don't want you to go outside of the country. They don't want you to try unconventional medicines.
No.
And I'll jump ahead just for a moment. When I contacted the doctor, I found the doctor in Germany, and I was able to talk to him. He speaks broken English, and he told me he needed for me to send him 20 cc's of my blood to analyze. But I'll get that up in just a minute. But the point I'm getting to is the fact that I go to 8 doctors over a period of 2 weeks to get them to draw the blood. They have to put something in it so it will last for a 2-day shipment, so it won't spoil. And everyone says, why do you want this? And then when I would tell them, not one of the 8 doctors, they all refused to do that for me. And they would use excuses like, that's a waste of your time and money. That is outside the AMA box, the American Medical Association box.
Yeah.
And my favorite, and you'll like this one, it's voodoo medicine.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, I've got 6 months to live. I'm supposed to go home and die. And my doctor actually told me, I said, well, when I got up to leave, what am I going to do now? And can you believe this? He said, whatever you have been doing up till now, just keep doing it for the amount of time you have left.
Right.
And my wife and I are really depressed, and I am suffering the tremendous emotional bounces so bad that I scream at God, God, why did you allow this to happen to me? After all you have allowed throughout my whole life, God, I can't, this is more than I can bear. That's where my title came from. Well, I was having a real good pity party. I immediately started thinking about all of those things that God had allowed to happen, in my opinion. You know, starting with my mother, as I said a while ago. And so I blamed him each step of the way until I went through my entire life and was back up to the present time, which probably took, you know, 30 minutes or whatever. And at that point, my emotions and attitude, I seemed to be a little bit more calm from reviewing my life, and the thought hit me that said, look, you've never been a quitter. You're not going to quit now. You're not just going to lay down and die like the doctor says. What can you do? What can I do? And then I thought, nearly everybody in the country can at least do this. They can get on the internet and they can Google for all kinds of information. That's what I started doing.
And you come across Dr. Horst Keith, is it Keith, in Germany. He's actually quite a famous ozone doctor, and in the specialist websites and journals that actually deal with ozone, his name comes up quite a lot. But he had some suggestions for you, because he initially said there's nothing we can do for you, but he took up the challenge, and perhaps you could take it from there.
I started with the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation of Europe, thinking that's a good source. All it said was, this is an untreatable, incurable lung disease, and the average lifespan is 7 years. So then I started Googling for doctors that had treated pulmonary fibrosis for patients, for cures, for research. For 2 weeks, and every couple of days, I would just get so depressed that I would give up. But the very next day, I'm back fighting again. After 2 weeks, I just sat back and said, that's it. I can't even imagine or think of any more work to put together. I'm finished. I guess it's done. It's over.
Sure.
And then here's where I believe that God came into the picture again. The thought popped in my head right then, just immediately. How about Googling a doctor that has his own lab? Now, I know that was God. I know it all the rest of my life. So I got on there, and boom, I pulled up this doctor in Germany. And after a couple of days, I may well even get him on the telephone. And thank God he spoke English. And so I'm all full of hope again. And so the first question is, Doctor, do you know anything about pulmonary fibrosis? No, just that it is incurable. Strike one. Well, Doctor, have you ever treated anybody with pulmonary fibrosis? No. Strike two. I said, well, you've done, and he had told me, I said, you've had over 25 years of researching all kinds of cancers. Could any of that research maybe help me? And he said, I don't think so. Strike three, and my heart sunk.
Yeah.
But meantime, he was being quiet, and I felt like it must have been minutes, but, you know, it was probably 15 seconds. But then all of a sudden he said, but Jerry, if you would be willing to send me 20 cc's of your blood, I would be willing to analyze it. And if I can come up with a culprit, he called it, I would be willing to research that and see if I can find or make a medicine that might kill that, whatever that culprit is.
Sure, sure.
And man, I was just full of hope again.
And at this point, did you know that the cause was, or was it idiopathic? You never had an idea of what the cause of pulmonary fibrosis.
He found a fungus in my blood, and he said it was related to the tree family. As you know, trees, throughout the years, they go through different cycles. They put off all kinds of spores and all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you must have been around trees a lot when you were a kid. And you know what? I grew up in the woods.
Yeah.
Now, wasn't that amazing? You know,
yeah.
And so he said, so send me 20 cc's of your blood. And that's where I mentioned a while ago, but now I think I'll just run to my doctor and get 20 cc's real quick and send it to Germany by FedEx. And I get these eight doctors all say, nope. And finally, I'm in Dallas, Texas. Finally, I find a doctor, a homeopathic doctor in Fort Worth, about an hour's drive, that says he is angry with the American Medical Association, controls they have in this country, and he was willing to do it. So I sent the blood, and Dr. Keith, he said, I'm his very first pulmonary fibrosis patient. He took 4 months when he analyzed the blood and found this fungus, and then he spent over 3 months coming up with the serum. Now, he took 4 months. I didn't sign a contract. I didn't send him any money up front. I had no obligation. You couldn't get that in the United States. I don't care who you were. And so he did that 4 months, and then he called me and said, I've got a serum that I think will help. Send me 200 cc's of your blood now. I'm going to mix it with my serum, and then I'm going to process that through my ozone oxidation machine, which just uses, as you know, 100% pure oxygen.
Yep.
So he made that, took him about 3 more weeks. We go over there and get the medicine. Now let me say that I have kept going for my 6-month breathing test ever since, and about a few weeks ago, I just had no one done, so I've been doing it for 7 years. So anyway, I kept going to my doctor for the pulmonary breathing test, and at the end of that 8 months, and I failed to mention a while ago, that my test, my lung capacity had dropped to 63%. At that rate, I was going to be on oxygen pretty soon and dead pretty soon after that.
Yep.
So during that 6 months, at the end of the 8 months of medicine, I go to my PFT, my doctor. He says, I don't understand it, but your lung capacity has quit dropping. Now, I have not told him about Germany. To this day, I don't tell him, because why would you tell doctors when they tell you that you're a liar and they're cynical and everything? So he doesn't feel the mistake. But anyway, I sent that report along with another 20 cc of blood to Germany. And this way it's going to get interesting. And Dr. Keith analyzed the blood, looked at the report, and he emailed me excited. He said, Jerry, these tests and now analyzing your blood again proves to me that I chose the right problem. I'm going to make you a second batch, another 8-month batch. I'm going to tweak it, make it stronger. Now, are you ready? Here's what he told my wife now. When you finish the second batch, you will be cured. 8 months later, I was cured. I went to my PFT doctor, and he says, after all the tests, he says, I don't understand. He says, you're in remission. That's not possible. It is impossible to be in remission. And I said, well, what about being cured? Oh, well, no. There is no such thing as being cured. I said, but there's no such thing as being in remission. Now, I was feeling good, obviously, because I just came from death's door, and my wife and I, we're being kind of, not mean, but we were kind of just pushing him and pushing him without even knowing about Germany.
Sure.
And I thought, well, how could I be? Oh, and by the way, my PFT, my lung capacity had climbed to 70%, which was impossible. Okay, so then we pushed him so much that sitting in his chair, he leaned back, threw both hands up into the air, looked up to the ceiling and said, I guess it's one of those God things.
I'm laughing. I'll tell you why, because a colleague of mine, who's got a brain tumor, and we'd been giving him a natural product, Boswellia, to reduce the brain tumor. And we went to see the doctor in the hospital, because the doctor wanted to operate immediately, and they done another scan, and it come back, and said, the tumor stopped growing. He said, the scan must have been wrong in the first place. And I thought,
yeah.
The trouble is that they can't seem to accept that people do cure things. The legal term for a cure is if you haven't relapsed within 5 years, which clearly you haven't. So I was wondering, did you speak to the AMA and say, look, you're wrong, there is a cure. I am cured from this. I've gone more than 5 years. So, you know, you want to adjust your books or do some more research. Had you approached anyone from higher authority?
Yes, I emailed different branches. Never would get a response. So finally, I also emailed and called the United States Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation of Chicago, Illinois, Dr. Ben Rose, president of that. And he was excited about it. I kept sending him information for about 3 months, and he'd keep saying he needed more information. Then I found a lady in California who is the CEO of the Coalition for Pulmonary Fibrosis, right, which is a validation type company.
Yep.
And what I think they want is they just want to prove you're wrong. I don't think they really want to prove you're right. But anyway, so I sent them information for 3 or 4 months. And the point I'm getting to is that eventually, after it looked like I had sent them everything, I thought of one more thing. I said, okay, I can tell you don't believe me, but what if I said I could give you a document when I was in the hospital and had the lung biopsy, a surgical procedure, removing lungs, pieces. And my doctor sent that to the Mayo Clinic lab in Phoenix, Arizona, which does like 10,000 lab analysis per year, and they're recognized world
exactly,
over, I think.
The Mayo Clinic,
And they confirmed it. And so both people said, oh, that would be so great. I sent that to both of them. And then they didn't get back in touch with me. And so then I contacted them and I said, well, then they were just hem-hawing around. So finally I called them back and I said, look, I have given you every kind of information there is. I've given you my doctor's name here. I said, but what if I can go a step further and I can set up an appointment, telephone appointment for you with Dr. Key, because we've got to be very good friends. So this is to both parties. That it, you know, the time that it's set up to talk, can you actually get on the telephone and confirm everything? Oh, that would be great. I will make this work. I'll get this worked out for you. Mm-hmm. 4 or 5 months later, they don't even talk to me anymore. And then this one doctor, at a speech, afterwards he came up to talk to me. He says, do you mind if I ask you a few questions? And I talked to everybody. Well, I promise you, he talked an hour and 20 minutes. When he finally finished, he said, well, Jerry, based on all my years of education and all of my vast experience and the last 5 years I've done nothing but research, you are, this is to my face in person, he says, you are either a liar or you are misdiagnosed. I said, well, doctor, let me tell you something. I didn't contact you. You contacted me. I have spent an hour and a half of my time answering every question that you ask, and I did not try to sell you anything. I got nothing to gain out of it. So what you do with the information is your business, but I got to go. Yep. Now, that's the kind of reactions that I get on the medical side. I have sent, referred over 200 people to Dr. Keith in 2 years, and I've asked people, would you please contact me by phone or email or letter, something, if you use this information. I would just like to know that I'm doing some good. Well, you know, a lot of people will never do that no matter what happens, but 21 people have actually called me and told me that they were cured of cancer or lung disease. And 1 year after Dr. Q said I was cured, he said, you are the first known person in the world ever cured of this disease. And so 1 year later, June of 2009, without even calling him or talking to him or anything, just on my own, I sent him another 20 cc's of blood because it had been 1 year. I sent it to him, and it took about 3 or 4 weeks, and then analysis, and he emailed me back and said, Jerry, there is no sign of it. You are still cured, and you don't need to send me blood every year. As long as you continue doing your breathing test, that will determine if anything has taken place. And if it did, then by all means, get in touch with me. But you're still cured, and just keep having your breathing test.
Right. And do you feel that another part of the problem in the medical profession is that it's split? One half says it's a disease, the other half says it's a condition, and there lies the problem.
Okay, I've done 7 years of research, as you could imagine, and I know based on not being a medical person, but all my research, pulmonary fibrosis is not a disease. Fibrosis is the hardening, deadening and hardening of the lung tissue. into like scar tissue. So that's fibrosis. Pulmonary is your chest area. So pulmonary fibrosis, the problem with researching it, in my opinion, for doctors, I mean for people that do the research, that there could be dozens and dozens of different kinds of things that will, can cause that. And I think they're mostly all autoimmune related. That means from breathing, drinking, eating, swallowing, that kind of, because it destroys your autoimmune system. And I think while most of the patients that have this are like myself, they're probably at least 50 years and older, because in my opinion, it takes years and years for any disease generally to beat down or break down your autoimmune system.
For people with these so-called terminal conditions, what advice can you offer them? Because clearly, your story is without doubt such an inspiration. You've taken responsibility for your own health. You decided that you wasn't going to die today or tomorrow. You were searching. You never gave up. How can you inspire other people to do exactly as you did, not to give up, not to accept if your doctor says go home, get your affairs in order? What is the way forward for these people?
Well, what I keep telling everybody in the speeches and everywhere, I'm saying, listen, we all want to live, so listen, the first thing I believe is you have to have hope. And for most of us, I believe that that would have to be, you have to turn to God. If you already believe in God, then I need that you need to renew your hope and faith and strength in believing in God. And I believe praying to God every day, and I believe with all my heart that God knows that He has a purpose for every single human being out there. And that purpose, He has to prepare you for that purpose, and based on whatever it is, determines, I guess, how long it would take for Him to prepare you. And so, therefore, I think you need to pray to God. You need to ask God, you know, what is your purpose for me, God? Where am I going? Because I believe that God, He likes to hear from us just like children talking to their dad. And He wants to hear us, and He wants to hear us ask Him for help. And at the same time, and if you don't already have a faith, you need to really try to find God, and as you build up this hope and faith, that becomes contagious. And then secondly, I tell everybody, listen, what does it cost you just to get on the computer, on the internet, and Google every kind of combinations? That will build some hope for you while you're building, you know, the other hope. And I believe that hope is contagious. I believe that hope has, I'm not a doctor, but I believe that a powerful hope and faith and belief, I believe it helps you to a degree with trying to cure some diseases. The positive attitude, I think, helps.
And, of course, they can pick up a copy of your book, Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? And there they'll be getting all the inspiration at first hand. So where can people pick up a copy of the book?
My website is jerrysmith.org. jerrysmith.org. I guess it's www.jsmith.org. Yep. And it's a 6-page. And let me say that one of the pages is titled Pulmonary Fibrosis. And it's equal to about 2 full typewritten written pages. It gives Dr. Keith's name, telephone number, where they're located, all of the, everything that I went through in finding how to get over there, how to find him, how the medicine was done, how he takes the medicine. There's total instructions. God's purpose for me was to write a book, because I started having a lot of people calling me after they found out about my cure, and how they found out, I don't know. But they started saying, well, have you read the book? Because there's a lot of us out here that need this information to know that there's a chance for hope and chance for maybe the cure. My very first guy that called me was an Army veteran served in Desert Storm, and he was down to 51% lung capacity.
Jesus.
And he was discharged by the Army and VA. Anyway, so I sent him, I finally convinced him to go to Germany, and 14 months later, he's cured. So I'm just telling you, I believe faith and positive thinking through God is the biggest thing you can do for yourself while you're searching.
Jerry Smith, author of the book Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear, and also the man that cured himself of the incurable, giving us all hope, giving us all inspiration. So if you'd like to know about his story, then please visit his website, which is jerrysmith.org, www.jerrysmith.org, and you can pick up a copy of his book, from that website. In the meantime, you've been listening to me, Mike Cavalli, and I wish you the very best of health and a great day. Bye-bye for now.